It's Wednesday, September 9th, 2009, and you're listening to episode 162 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 13 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
My name is Pat.
My name is Chris.
My name is Wayne, and I'm still here.
Chris.
Dan.
I gotta bust your balls over something.
Be gentle.
So,
maybe a book?
This
anvil?
Past week, I went out and queried a few of my friends. Yeah. These are people who can quote football and baseball stats like we can dragon breath weapons. Okay? These are guys that are really into baseball, football. I mean, they watch the games, they keep up with the commentary, they read the sports column, they know it inside and out.
The complete opposite of all of us.
Exactly.
Yes. Okay.
You want to know how many of them had ever heard the phrase sister kisser before?
How many?
Pick a number between zero and zero.
I'm going to pick zero.
Yeah, that would be correct.
Okay, you know what? You know, I can explain that. The answer is probably they're losers.
Are kind of cute.
Oh.
Wow.
So then I decide, okay, I'm going to at least give Chris...
It might be a regional thing.
The final benefit of the doubt, check Urban Dictionary. Sister Space Kisser is only a reference to hot twins that are willing to make out. Sister Dash Kisser...
You kept looking after that?
I...
Pat got that wistful look in his eyes.
I can just pick Pat up off the floor.
Sister Dash Kisser did fit his definition. It had been vetted by a whopping 3 people, which is probably nothing but hussies.
It might be regional.
Regional to his house.
You think somebody would have heard this. So Chris, as punishment...
Did they have Sister Colon Kisser?
I seriously hope
you know what
internet?
I've actually seen a couple movies about that very subject.
Pat, I thought we talked about your home movies.
So Chris,
yeah, I was gonna say,
I'm thinking as punishment for a week, your form avatar is probably going to be changed to there's no candy at this household.
you can change my avatar when you can take Rita Repulsa from my cold dead hands.
As the guy that has the admin password to the server, that won't be hard.
Well, there I never said my cold, dead hands would be very strong.
All right, Chris, I'm going to let you fire back. Not at me, but just in general. You had a subject you wanted to rant about.
I almost forgot what it was. You got me so flustered with the whole system. I wasn't prepped about what the ball busting was going to be about, so I was only taken slightly off guard.
It's okay. He's having a senior moment.
Yeah, just a minute. You said sister, and suddenly you're confused.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have a sister, Chris?
I have 5 sisters.
Wow.
Do you really?
I do, yeah.
How many brothers?
I come from a family of 7, and my brother is the oldest, and I'm the youngest, and so we bookend.
Oh,
and,
you poor bastard.
There are 5
Which
sisters.
Which one's the best kisser?
Wow. Now, where'd you all grow up?
I'm stopped, Chris is the youngest. I mean, that's...
How old are these ancients, these elder gods that come before him?
My oldest brother, Zeus, is... there's a 15-year age gap in between my oldest, the oldest of the family, my brother John and I.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, all right, we'll go on, though. You had a topic, so go ahead.
Not so much a topic, it's just kind of a rant. You know, and you see this damn near everywhere, really, whether you sit down at the gaming table, you see it at cons a lot. What I guess the best way to equate it to would be nerd waving, is really what it is, because you get around and you can just start be having a conversation about something. It doesn't matter what it is. Say, for example, you could just be talking about guns, and you can make a comment about, you know, I think this gun looks really cool. And then somebody who's in the group who's bound to know more about guns than anyone else is going to sit there and pipe in and say, well, yes, but its rate of fire is only this, and the recoil is so bad, there's no accuracy whatsoever, so blah, 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 blah. And they go on and on about how crappy this gun is, despite its aesthetic pleasingness to the eye. My general thought about this kind of stuff is, who cares? I mean, I understand why you like to impart knowledge upon people, because you feel it makes you feel better. If you're having a debate, great. All more power to you. But if you're just sitting there talking, that's not the time for it. Have a little courtesy with the people that you're with. And, you know, Just let him talk. What's wrong with just talking, you know?
Chris, did somebody browbeat you recently with gun knowledge?
No, because that kind of stuff honestly doesn't bother me at all. I quite frankly don't care if somebody wants to take out their nerd penis and start waving it around. It doesn't really...
I think that if a nerd came up to me and took off their penis and started waving it around, I would be a little bothered. But I'm a pretty open-minded guy, and I would be bothered.
If I was at a con and somebody took out their penis and started waving it at me...
No, took off their penis and started waving.
They would find out about my gun knowledge.
I don't know, things like that really bother me. If somebody is trying to make a point about something, or if somebody just wants to have the floor, most people are nervous enough around people they only marginally know anyway and don't want to say anything stupid. So why make them feel stupid if you don't really have to? If you do, great, go for it. Make them feel as dumb as they possibly could be. But if you don't really have to, what's the point?
I see this constantly in comic books, on forums, in talking about movies. It doesn't matter what the subject is. You've got the people out there that will basically give you the attitude of, that's mainstream, that can't be good. What I like is more obscure than what you like, and thus it must be better. Or you have the exact opposite of, I've never heard of that, that can't be any good.
This is more to Chris's angle than Wayne's. But Chris, let me throw something out there. Do you think maybe this is because amongst geeks, our background growing up, depending on the generation, particularly more so with the older generation and the younger generation coming up, is we did not have a whole lot going for us. We weren't socially in, blah, blah, blah. But the
geeks
one thing,
of our age. Because
that's what she said. I said the generation. Okay. But the one thing that we had going for us that everyone knew, everyone respected, everyone praised us for was our intelligence.
No, it was that we could fix their computer.
Yeah, I wouldn't even say praised. It was something they took advantage of and made fun of.
But the point is that nonetheless, they respected it. It was the
there was definitely a degree of respect.
And so therefore, because of that, because probably on subconscious level, a lot of geeks, and I have found myself in this boat as well. So I'm not pointing the finger anywhere else. I can just start with me. But because of the fact that your intellect is the one thing you feel like you have and nobody can question, nobody can take away, you're a little quicker.
Well, they can hit you in the head with a 2x4 and take your intellect away.
But the point is that you're a little quicker to defend that. You know, if you have 100 things and lose one, you're going to care. If you have one thing and lose one, you're going to care a whole lot more.
Yeah, if you identify yourself as that one thing, I'm the smart guy, I am the comic geek, I am the movie geek, and whatever.
Yeah.
And someone comes along and out-geeks you. If that's who you identify yourself as, you know, who are you then? If you're not that, if this guy's more that than you, where does that leave you?
It leaves you with nothing. Your life is defined by your geeky knowledge.
Well, you see, and that's the thing. And I think a lot of this comes from... Well, I guess, let's see. What was your actual question? Do you think it's just because of their intelligence then, Dan, that's the one thing they feel they can hold on to, so they have to use it when they can?
Well, actually, the question is, which of your five sisters is the best kisser?
And that was my question.
And that was Wayne's question.
God, that is extremely disturbing. Even for Pat, that's disturbing. Answer.
You know what would be most disturbing is if you replied his brother.
Which sister is the best kisser? Todd.
But I don't know that there was a question in there. It was just more of a psychoanalysis of a...
I think it's a human nature thing, to be quite honest with you. Because this certainly is not exclusive. You get your sports fans that you were just talking about around with each other, and as soon as they start talking sports, one of the guys clearly is going to be more sports savvy than the rest, and he's going to be whipping the stats around here and there. He's going to have his sports penis, basically, that he's going to be throwing around. Yeah, it's a social hierarchy kind of thing. And
well, something that I like to do, and I think that most people do, is say you're in a conversation, like we are. We're all standing around or sitting around behind these mics, we're having a conversation. And somebody starts talking about a subject matter that I know something about or that I'm really interested. We'll take World War II, for example. And it's like, oh, well, this and this about World War II, isn't that cool? I don't want to prove them wrong, but I want to get out on the table and say, oh, yeah, but did you hear about this obscure World War II fact? Look at me. I'm cool.
That's different, though. Yeah. That's different than counteracting what they're doing. If you're participating and joining in the conversation by adding something to it,
yeah,
rather than attacking what they said or counterpointing what they said, then it's all really in the delivery.
You know what I did one time, and I feel like really bad about this? This is a guy at work. We were sitting around at lunch, and we were talking about something like the space program or something, and he said that, you know, oh yeah, you know, NASA, they spent like hundreds of thousands of dollars on the space pin, you know, the pin that could write in zero gravity,
right,
and when they could just use, you know, the Russians were using 50-cent pencils, you know, pencils and all that stuff. Well, I had just got through reading an article a couple days ago about how that's an urban myth, about how a guy in NASA developed it, and he did it in his spare time, and it was free, and it doesn't cost $100,000, and you can't use a pencil in space, or you shouldn't, because graphite gets everywhere, and blah, 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 all these different reasons and stuff. And as soon as he said that, I take my finger out, I point it right at him, I'm like, ha, you know, that's an urban legend, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like waggling my finger at him as I say it, and he lifts his hands like, whoa, whoa, hey, yeah, whatever you say, Chad. And I thought about it. It's like, you know, I didn't do that to get him. I didn't do that to waggle my nerd NASA penis around, or whatever analogy we're using about.
Just a minute, Chad. You shoved your rutabaga in his face.
No, I did not shove my rutabaga in his face. It was, I was able to contribute an obscure piece of knowledge to the conversation, and I got excited about it. I got too excited about it, and I was kind of a douche when I did it, but I wonder how much of that happens too. I wonder how much of it is people just really want to be, they want to be loved and accepted, and they want to impress their friends and coworkers.
It's
and,
the, hey, look at me mentality.
Yeah.
It's, you know, this conversation is happening, I can be a part of this.
I think a lot of that is the whole, yeah, Me Too. I mean, that's, these are the same reasons why you see the Me Too posts in the forum. You know, it's, yeah, they do. They want to be part of it. They want to participate. And
is that necessarily a bad thing?
Let me give two reasons why I don't think it's a bad
thing. I think my example of me whipping my finger out and pointing at the guy and waggling my finger and getting too excited, I think that's the extreme. I think that is a bad thing.
I also think it's bad on forums because too many people just pop over to Google. Anyone can outsmart anyone if with a little Google.
Yeah, yeah. We have the breath of human knowledge, right or wrong.
I say exactly right or wrong. Yeah, you can just link snow someone. The few times I've done formalized debates on the internet, that's one of my rules, is I will accept no links. Because it's so easy to link snow somebody, but another topic for another time. But I don't think this tells the whole story, because I think there's two facts that we need to include here to really tell the full story. Fact number one is it is human nature, and this is a good thing, that we want to share information.
Mm-hmm.
If we did not want to share information, then things like a lot of bears hang out in those woods, don't go over there without your spear, we would not have made it this far as a race. Things like, hey, here's the proper way to use a tool or a better way to build a computer. These are all things that have been necessary and important to our advancement as a species.
I want you to know is that as soon as you gave the caveman spear example, I wanted to jump in there with a little knowledge about throwing sticks and the development of spears.
Yeah, I know.
And I'm like, I actually had to restrain myself. Wow.
So well, Chad was a constructive one. The caveman actually did not possess spears, and they, well, as a matter of fact, used rocks as tools.
Speaking anthropologically, caveman's not even correct anyway, because people still live in caves today, and blah, blah, blah. Point.
What about the cave women?
And the Atlantis.
They were too busy getting their follicles strengthened.
But they ate bear, and I don't know. But the second thing being that sometimes their corrective knowledge is useful, okay? I have done a series of blog posts that I hope to continue once I get some breathing space. But I've done a series of blog posts on how I think capital ship combat or combat in space would work. And I've tried to keep it no presumed technology. Just look, here's the math and science behind it. And as I follow the debate, sometimes people will come back to me with a, wait a minute, you're wrong, what about this? Or sometimes even the people posting in response, whether on the blog or in the forums, they will go off on a tangent I was never even chasing in the first place, and they'll get into it with each other. And at times, I'm sitting here looking at this, and at times it'll start to look like nerd waving. But at the same time, isn't it useful to have correct information?
Yeah.
That if I'm trying to describe something or explain something or understand something, then isn't it better to have correct information? Chris, and let's go back to your original example of guns. In the case of a role-playing game, the role-playing game, if it has guns, is probably trying to simulate firearm combat, therefore wouldn't accurately representing the differences between an M16 and an AK-47 be of some significance and usefulness to the role-playing game.
Well, absolutely. Of course it would. That kind of thing that you're talking about, it goes in going away from the original point being that people are using their knowledge in a quote-unquote abusive manner towards someone else. In the example I gave, someone can talk about the aesthetic nature of an M16 or any other firearm, and that really has nothing to do with its performance value. Something can look great, but on the whole be really crappy. Zingers, for example, taste really good, probably some of the worst food you could ever eat, but, you know, they sure do taste good, but it's unhealthy.
Wait, stop. Are you talking trash about Zingers?
Oh, no, are you kidding? I love Zingers.
You better at least be talking trash about either the pink ones or the chocolate ones.
If you're talking
trash about the lemon ones with yellow icing...
I will put this on the table
I will
right
pause
now.
No, I will put that on the table.
I will put this on the table right now.
Chad, put that away.
And then I will put this point on the table of saying Zingers are better than Twinkies.
Oh, gosh, yes. Hands down. No doubt about it. Zingers are way better than Twinkies. Always have been.
Do you know what they call Zingers in Greece?
God's food?
Ambrosia. Yeah, exactly. You're exactly right. They call them ambrosia.
I just had some zingers today, as a matter of fact. So
it's so bad for you.
But did you know this random little fact about zingers?
But that's the point.
You know what, Chris? You actually, even as you were saying that, you know what's going through my head? It's an urban myth that Twinkies would survive a nuclear war.
You see, and that's the thing is that I can sit here and say, "Boy, zingers sure are good," or "Twinkies sure are good," and then you could say, "Well, yes, but they would never survive a nuclear war, and you shouldn't really eat them anyway." Blah, blah, blah to you.
So what we're kind of coming from this is that Snopes is the greatest website in the world for dispelling false knowledge, yet it's the worst site in the world for social interactions.
I guess that's maybe if there's a punchline to this, and I don't know that there is.
The punchline is, just be nice to people. Yeah, don't be a douche. Exactly. I mean, yeah, it's great if you want to make a point. And like I said, if you need to stick it to someone, stick it to them. But if not...
It's all about sex with Chris. Well, I love it.
You know, I've also had conversations where people are sitting around, and it's what I refer to just internally as a building conversation, where somebody makes a point, we'll use the World War II example, somebody makes a point about World War II, and then somebody says, oh, did you know this about World War II? Oh, yes, and did you know this, this, and this? And we had this conversation at dinner today, mm-hmm. where Dan was talking about, I don't even want to get into it because we'll be here all freaking day with all of us because we're huge history nerds. But basically, Dan made a point about World War II in Japan and technology. And then Pat was like, oh, did you know that this happened? Oh, really? That's pretty cool. Well, did you know this happened? Then Wayne came in. It's like, oh, yeah, you know, I read about this. And then it just builds facts. I think that that's the cool way to have this conversation.
Yes.
Nobody, my knowledge is so much cooler than your knowledge.
Right.
And I think you get into that when you're going to
all sharing different angles on the same topic.
Yeah.
And not invalidating anything else anybody is saying.
Well, but even more than that, it's wanted angles.
Yes.
I think that the thing you've got to look at here to really know when to whip this out and when to keep it put away is, one, is your knowledge wanted? And two, is your knowledge actually that useful? Because if you're just doing this either to put someone else down or to make yourself look big, or you're just being pedantic when nobody really wants to hear it. Mm-hmm. But maybe the problem is that a lot of these people, or every person in at least one circumstance, because we've all put our foot in our mouths at some point in our lives, just like swing and miss.
Like the time I was bagging, I was a teenager, and this lady comes up to me and goes, do these M&Ms have peanuts in them? And I take the M&Ms, I go, yeah, they have peanuts in it. It says it right here. Can't you see? And I look up and she's blind. I'm like, oh, no.
You know what? If it makes you feel any better, I did something like that once. And it essentially was almost the same thing in the sense that there's one girl, a teacher that she really admired and everything had died. And we were all going on this field trip together. And we happened to be sitting there waiting to go. And she had just learned that he had died, and she was taking out her Walkman, and the batteries had died. And they had died because she had left the play button running, and I said, oh, thinking in my mind, at least the batteries were doing a good job of what they were doing, you know, powering this Walkman. I said, well, at least they died running. Then, you know, and then it's like, oh, well, I guess I'll just leave right now. Thank you very much. That's the only thing you've heard from Pat the entire time.
Oh God, Chris, I love you so much. Oh.
So yes, point is, be nice to people, or be excellent to one another, is essentially what we're saying. I'm going to close this part of it because I have to know. I'm assuming I already know Dan's answer, but so Dan, your favorite Zinger are the yellow kind with the frosting?
Oh yes, the lemon kind. I guess it's lemon flavor. The yellow ones with yellow icing.
I don't think they're lemon. Not, I think they're lemon. They're just like just vanilla
sponge cake.
Yeah, they're vanilla.
It's just the vanilla.
It's a vanilla icing.
Vanilla. Yeah, because
you think you lemon.
I think it probably
yellow.
Has a little bit of citrus or like lemon zest or something in it.
Vitamin C for preservatives.
Something like that.
My favorite ones are actually the yellow ones without the icing.
Oh, you're wrong.
No, yeah, too bad.
Zingers are about the icing.
Yeah. Wayne, you're off the show.
Yeah, it's been nice having
Wayne,
you.
Wayne, go learn some martial
it's
arts.
It's not my favorite.
Yeah, don't you have a karate class or something?
It's not my favorite Zinger, but I've had caramel Zingers before. Where it's, ooh, it's the yellow sponge
You
cake.
Know what my favorite thing is? Since your
sex?
Yeah, well.
Heroin?
No, more
sex?
Than, yeah,
sex?
I've never tried heroin, so I can't really say. But I love it, and you cannot get them here. I thought they were discontinued completely. They're not. They're still available elsewhere in the U.S., just not here. It's Chocodiles. That is God's food.
No, Zingers are better.
I don't know.
I do.
If I was sitting there in floating in the ether, and there was like the elemental plane of Zinger on the left hand, the elemental plane of Chocodile on the right hand, and wherever I went, I would be forever. It would be a long choice.
Isn't a Chocodile just a chocolate covered Twinkie?
Yeah, that's exactly all it is.
No, I think a Zinger
is. They don't ship them this far east.
Yeah, the way they also call things differently on the coast and stuff too, because I think the things that we call Susie Q's here are called oh crap,
you're talking rolls? About.
They call them something else on the East Coast.
Are they hoes or
no?
Because we have ho-hos.
Plumpkins.
What are they?
Plumpkins.
Yeah, that's,
yes, yes, Dan. They're
definitely
plumpkins.
It's definitely a plumpkin.
In fact, when you go to East Coast, go into a convenience store and ask the person behind the counter where you can get a plumpkin.
Yeah.
Well, somebody will answer something, or they will know. But
someone on our forums will tell us where to get a blumpkin on the East Coast.
Really?
Yes.
That's probably Chad at.
So.
My favorite are the red with the coconut.
I like those too. I liked them when I was a kid. I don't like them as much anymore. I kind of
Chris,
went through my phase.
You fail as a human being.
Yeah,
that's
I don't
because,
like the
that's because they give you they totally put your blood sugar out of whack and then you crash. That's why you don't like them now. Mm.
Wait a second!
I just used my knowledge to totally hit you in the face with my Zinger penis.
Put it away, Chris.
Your Zenus.
So
are we going to talk about gaming? So,
have you guys ever seen, this will be my last thought before we get on to gaming stuff, have you guys ever seen the map of the United States where they chart out and they color code the names of
soda or pop
yes,
or coke
yes.
like soda
yes.
versus pop
yes
versus
carbonated
coke.
Beverage soda pop coke cola
you mean soda
yes
you mean pop.
I mean soda and St. Louis is in the soda it's funny yes. because St. Louis is a tiny little island of soda surrounded by, I think, pop. Hmm. But it is fascinating. They graphed out the entire U.S. with what they call carbonated beverages. And it's weird because it falls so cleanly along cultural lines. Like, where you would expect people to be different, they call carbonated beverages something else. It's really weird.
I really
weird.
Can't think of a cultural stereotype that would have a soda pop preference.
I've actually heard someone order a Pepsi Coke.
Huh.
I will try and link this off the show notes if I can track it down.
I did know somebody from Pennsylvania and they call
it
pop.
We'll get into RPG stuff now. I want to...
Oh, by the way, news item.
What's that?
I've got a blog that I'm doing.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so you said you're going to have a Blumpkin.
I've got a Blumpkin blog.
I'm gonna work on one of those.
You know, for someone that seems so anti-Web 2.0,
I hate
your Twitter, your blog, your Facebook.
Yes, I do.
He's like a 14-year-old. He's a 14-year-old girl in a bald man's body.
Well, what you think he do after?
It's better than being a bald man in a 14-year-old girl's body.
That's true.
All right.
So anyway,
I beg to differ.
since we just started planning Fear the Con 3, I mean,
just started.
There's very, very little.
Yeah, we don't have dates. We don't have a location. We've got nothing at this point.
Well, I describe it in the blog I'm doing, which is a Fear the Con 3 planning blog, where I'm going to try to relate my experiences as we plan it, then also pull in stories and examples from last year's con. Like I said in the blog, it's like I've got all of these ideas, and now we're at the stage where I take the ideas and I pull them together into jobs, and then I assign those jobs and I turn the ideas into action. And I'm like trying to describe that process and such.
What is the blog address? Is it fearthecon.blogspot.com?
That is exactly it.
Okay. And I'll put that in the show notes. So if you're on the highway right now, you don't need to carve that into your forearm. We'll just go and put it in the show notes.
But it couldn't hurt.
And I'm also
it couldn't hurt at all.
I'm also going to try to cross post it to our Fear the Boot main site.
Right.
So Wayne asked me why I did it on Blogspot and why I didn't just do it on our main site. And it's like, I gave him a couple bullshit reasons. And
yeah, they were all bullshit reasons.
Yeah, they were. Really, the honest truth is I don't have a login to the site.
It'd be really hard for me to give you one. So
yeah. Well, I didn't at the moment I thought of it to do it. I didn't have a login for the site. And if I didn't do it at that moment, I was never going to do it.
Yeah,
I think we've all had those moments.
Yeah.
It's hours of work that would take me 30 seconds, but yeah, we'll get it on the main blog as well, hopefully. But if not, I
will be updating both. I'll be cross-posting. Yeah.
So if not, then it's fearthecon.blogspot.com. Before we get into the main RPG topic, there's something we said in the last show I want to explain, because we've used it a few times.
This isn't an apology or...
No, it's not an apology. Okay. It's just an explanation.
And I fully support this.
And I don't know that we've ever explained it. Or if we have, we've not explained it probably often enough. So if people like have jumped into the Fear of the Boot continuity more recently, they may have no idea what we're talking about. And we use it both as a noun and a verb, which is bookstore. Sorry. Are you about to say something nasty?
No, I was going to be like, damn it, Dan, you're teasing me. Just tell me what it is. But you actually got to the point right when I said that.
So, yeah. Okay.
Which is completely the opposite of the story he's about to tell.
Whenever we talk about a bookstore or bookstoring something, we mean wasting time on a non-essential point in the plot. Where it came from was there was a Transformers campaign we were running years ago, and they were on a space station. And there was a store that was selling data cores of information. And I even said to them, this would be the equivalent of a highly technologically advanced bookstore. And I called it a Walden Books, which at the time was a small bookstore chain here in St. Louis. You think it was a Barnes & Noble or Borders, except a quarter of the size.
Hey, we've got Walden Books up here. We know.
What? You've got books in corn country.
They have books on corn.
They write them on the shucks.
What do you do at a bookstore when you're not riding around on pigs?
There's a guy that I know whose name is John, not John Grass, a different John, who comes from some little small town in outstate Missouri. I don't even know where. And he said that he was a champion corn shucker. I don't understand. Yeah. I'm a champion stand up from a chair guy.
You peel the leaves off corn. It's like boom, boom,
you
boom.
You peel the leaves, you peel the silk. What is there to know? I don't understand how you can beat somebody else at this.
It's a speed thing.
It is a speed thing. And he blew me away. I'm going to have to see if I can get a video of this and put it on YouTube. But we had a barbecue at my place. And Chad, you were there. I don't think you saw him do this. No. And I handed him an unshucked ear of corn and said, show me what makes you a champion corn shucker. And it was like, break, snap, clean. Like that fast.
And you're like, did I even just see that?
Yeah, it was that fast. I mean, for me, you know, you peel it back and it takes a minute or two to do. It was just like he made one break, pulls, and it's off and hands it to me. I didn't even know this was possible, but that's a tangent. Hey, Pat,
Pat, isn't it funny how these city slickers are kind of easily amused?
Yeah, it is. It really is.
I'm sorry. I guess we're not throwing feces at each other.
I didn't spend my life grabbing electrified barbed wire and hopping on cow crap.
It's quaint. It really is.
I
think that they're amazed when they find out that, you know, like vegetables grow in the ground. Like, oh my God, potatoes! Potatoes are—they grow in the ground. Or tomatoes, they come off of a plant,
a vine,
if you will.
A vine.
I'm all ears as long as he wants to keep talking, Chris. Yeah.
On a different note, did you know it's I amazing. Had a stock?
I just thought that corn came pre-wrapped in cellophane wrapper. There's in the little
car. That's
in
a
the
great kernel of knowledge. Thing.
That's what I was. Yeah, you beat me there. You.
Cause, that's because I'm all ears. Oh, wait, you used
yeah, that I already used that so. One.
Quick, somebody right, think anyway, of something for Cobb.
So, okay. Whenever we talk about a bookstore, use the phrase bookstore, it's just slang internal and idiosyncratic to our group that just means to waste time somewhere in the setting or plot where there is nothing going on. Because these guys, it's not these guys, the guys I was gaming with, spent a huge amount of time. And at some point, I just stopped and said, guys, it's just a damned bookstore. Get on with the plot.
Yeah, we would never do that. Not if you had a sausage
no.
store.
Oh, no.
Now, that's a whole other story there.
And so that's, anyway, that's just what that word means. So let's get on to today's main topics.
No, we need more news and tangents and worthless knowledge. Well, I want to impress everybody with my knowledge. All right,
we've got some loose thoughts on running one shots before we get to today's brawl here. Or do you want to come back to these at the end of the episode? Do you want to do the brawl now?
I don't even know what the hell we're talking about.
Let's brawl, because then we can make up with your short topics and then realize that they're longer topics, and you can say that we'll save them for next episode.
All right. And then we'll never ever get back to them. Yeah.
All right, who was it that suggested this brawl? I want them to introduce it.
So one of the topics that's been talked about previously, but not by any of us except for Dan, is the topic of character advancement. And
you know what's funny? Wayne knows more about this show than I do.
Who the hell are you people?
Who were the hosts on that show? Because you know more about this. He actually has even figured out, down to the number, how many shows we've each appeared on.
Oh, this,
I have an Excel spreadsheet.
I was just going to say, this man is a, right. an Excel
okay.
junkie.
So outside of me, who was on that show?
Stalker. You're asking me now when I don't have my laptop in front of me.
All right. Fine. I was the only one here. I don't know who else was here. Santa and the
Yeah, whenever
buddy.
Wayne was about to fire me at work, I'd be like, well, Wayne, you know, if I get fired, I can't do the show anymore. He's like, damn it.
Fine, it was me, Jesus, and Aslan. I was really confused. Wayne, go on.
Best episode ever.
Nice. So basically, I think with this group, there may be some different opinions on character advancement. I know I've had the conversation with Chad a few times. And the first question is really, is character advancement a necessity in your game? Does it take anything away from your game?
So the topic here, the broader topic, is character advancement and role-playing.
Or how is Chris wrong?
Chris, go ahead and state your opinion, just so Chad can tell you how you're wrong.
Oh, I'm wrong with character advancement. Character advancement, in the broad sense, is A, necessary, B, required, and C, enjoyable? There you go. All right.
Defend.
Who, me?
Yeah, well, I'll explain. Expound.
What was the first point I gave?
necessary?
I think necessary. Yeah, that's right.
Kosher, right?
Yes. A role-playing game, of course, you know, obviously it's a simulation when you come down to it, but it's a simulation that has reflections of real life.
Oh, man, there's 6 pages of posts right there.
What did he say? I wasn't even listening. I was flirting with Pat.
Yeah.
Role-playing games are fundamentally a simulation.
With reflections of real life going on. And in real life, you as a person, you advance in very certain ways, whether you become more educated in the job that you're doing, whether you go to school and learn a skill or learn a trade, but you do learn things. And as a human being, you advance. If you have a character, regardless of whether that character is, you know, a bug-eyed alien or a human or a dwarf or whatever, they too still have to grow as their life goes on, as they run through the campaign. And so you essentially need to simulate that, and that's where character advancement comes in. So that's where it's necessary.
That makes a little bit of sense if what you're trying to do, let's say I'm killing these things. You're going to get a little better at killing these things. How did killing this teach me how to swim?
Because, as to quote Chad from earlier, because Gary Gygax said it does.
That's right, and I'm not messing around with the ghost of Gary Gygax. I don't have near enough levels for that.
Let me back up.
I don't think anybody does. You need to do
character advancement.
Yeah, but I hate character advancement, so...
All right, I agree it is logical in that as you do something longer, you ought to get better at it. You grow as a human being. The second thing I would add to that is I think it also helps people get a sense of investment in their character. Now, Chad's going to say that shouldn't be the main source of investment. We'll get to that.
Well, you're not even saying that. You're just saying it's a sense of investment.
It's a sense of investment. and gives you the idea that you're progressing. But Chris, before we get to the tangent arguments, I know we're going to come out of this. Let me ask you something else. I'm 32 years old. I'm hardly an old man. But in the course of my life, I have gone over that magic age of 27 or 28. I am now aging downward.
You're going to be 33 next month.
I know, but my point is, I have hit the point where for a few years, I've been aging downward instead of upward. There's two kinds of aging. I can't remember where they are.
Why you got to be so negative about the whole aging downward business? But go ahead.
I know. At your point, you just have to paint it with whatever rose you can.
That's right. I have my glasses adjusted. Thank you.
I'm on the other side of the hump, so I'm just barely realizing I'm going down. I'm just starting to remember the things I can't remember. But here's the thing. You also atrophy. And that is never simulated in a role-playing game. I don't think...
Look at you, Dan. You took German classes starting in junior high every single year, took all the German classes they offered... Correct me if I'm wrong. You took all the German classes they offered in high school, including the advanced ones.
And in college.
And in talking to you recently... You can barely speak any
of it. Yes, I was at one point...
You're pretty fluent.
I don't know if I'd quite say I was fluent. I was really good. If you had dumped me in Germany, I could have gotten around using more than simple phrases. I could have actually carried on broken conversations. I mean, Spanglish kind of conversations, but I couldn't...
Only in German.
Yeah, except in German. But I could have done it. Today, all I can remember is a handful of obscenities, and that's it. That's all that's left. And... That's not simulated in a role-playing game. You might have an age thing where once you hit an extreme age, you start gaining intellect and wisdom and losing strength and dex. But even that, really, I mean, that's not atrophy. That's a one-for-one trade. That's just a change.
And they had rules for that in first edition D&D. But the thing is, with that kind of stuff, that's not fun. Nobody wants to do that. That's not fun things. Even your example of, you know, you took all this German and forgot. I took 2 years of German as well, and I can remember how to ask to go to the bathroom, and that's about it.
Character death's not fun either, but that's still in games and still seen as an important part to a lot of people.
It could be fun.
Could be fun.
You pick your negatives and
well,
character death things.
Why can't atrophy be one of the negatives that you pick?
Well, go for it. I don't have any problem.
No, you're trying
doing
to stop
it,
me, Chris.
You're threatening us with corn.
Well, you know what?
I'm just saying that most games don't do that because, well, A, they just nobody ever set a precedent to really do so and really followed through with it. And I think that kind of thing is also a bit more difficult to do, only in the sense that that goes with the assumption that, you know, campaigns go on that long. And I mean, yeah, okay, now someone's going to take out their nerd member and say, well, I've been doing the same campaign for 25 years. But most people
That's
don't.
Exactly what they'd say, too.
Yes, it would be. And they would add the on there. But the majority of people don't do that. So it's very difficult to simulate. Very difficult to simulate that kind of thing.
This may be one of those things video games do better than role-playing games. But the example that came to my mind was Ultima Online, which I didn't play for terribly long. But when you played Ultima Online, the longer you used a skill, the better you got at it. If you went out and swung your sword at things, you got better at swords. If you stop swinging your sword at things, I think you're allowed to lock 3 skills so they wouldn't atrophy. But if this was not one of your lock skills, and then you spent the next 6 months of gameplay screwing around with trade skills, your sword skill went down.
Jeez, that sounds like an awful
Well,
limit,
it's tedious. It's tedious.
You know, it also always assumes that just doing something is all it takes to get better. If you do something the wrong way consistently, you're not going to get better. You're just going to keep doing it the wrong way.
Well, okay, yeah. I'd be presuming you're not learning from your mistakes. Believe me, there are things I've done the wrong way, and I've learned a whole lot from doing them.
Well, that's
them.
The key. If you learn from your mistakes, that's one thing. But it just doesn't automatically mean you get better because you're doing something over and over.
I remember...
Most cases it does, but not always.
I remember someone posting on the Fear the Boot forums a long time ago that we should do a... play session and tape it. For even worse reasons. Not because they want to hear our game sessions, because like, well, I'd love to see all the mistakes you guys made and take you down a notch. It's like, dude, you don't get it. Fear the Boot is not put out because we're gaming experts. It's because we have spent 20 years screwing the pooch.
Yeah.
We have made
literally.
Yeah. We have made... Actually, yeah, we did have one game where... Anyway, but...
What? No. I didn't say what. Continue.
All right.
I don't want to know.
But we have spent 20-some-odd years making every mistake conceivable, learning from those, and thereby improving our games.
Oh, so you're saying that you make more mistakes than I do now, huh? Is that what you're saying?
I can tell you, no, you don't make no mistakes.
You are better than me.
Yeah, yeah, you mess up. I mess up role-playing games way more than you do. Uh-huh. Here's my take on it. This is an example I used with Wayne when we were discussing this over the week. When you're talking about mechanical advancement, you know, you do things, you get experience points over time for doing all kind of stuff, and then you either spend those points or you level and you get stuff that you can spend out however you want. I understand that that's an abstraction, but it's still very difficult for me to get into this concept of, I have killed this guy. I have role-played and negotiated a peace with the king, and I have gone through and I have discovered a new area that no one has ever been through before, and I have gotten this orb of power or whatever. Now I learn how to swim. And it's like, where did this come from? There's this disconnect. And I understand that, like I said, I understand that's an abstraction, but there's this huge disconnect between those examples. And another thing is that you're rewarding play, and I just don't like the idea of rewarding play. When we did this topic, because we're actually reviewing this topic because we have so many new people on the show, when we did this topic the first time, John and I got into a debate where he was like, well, what about rewarding players? What about giving players reward for doing a good job? And I'm like, to me, that's not a necessary aspect of the game. It's playing the game. It's doing these things. It's having the fun. It's telling the story. It's interacting with the story. It's the players changing and manipulating, having an influence on the story and the world around them. That's the cool thing. And he looks at me and he goes, well, so you're saying the game is its own reward, or the play is its own reward? And my response is, yes, that's absolutely true. And when I run a game, it isn't a matter of you do this and you do that and you get it. It's a matter of just what is most realistic. If we're doing the Lord of the Rings, D&D sort of, we're traveling 1,000 miles to do the whatever, and as the adventurers are traveling and having their adventures, and Dan's character is saying, Chad, every night when we do camp and it's my turn to watch, I'm doing push-ups and exercises, and I'm trying to get more in shape because I'm playing a dumpy merchant, and you know, we have this adventure and I'm holding everyone back, so I want to get in shape, and I want to do that when it's my turn to watch, not just everyone. It's like, okay. Well, as game session goes on, he might remind me of that. And it's just like, here, you can have it. You can have the increase in strength. You can have the whatever, because it's realistic. It makes sense. It's cool. And you did it and you developed your character. Wayne's character currently in our current game, you know, for all intents and purposes, playing the big dumb warrior.
Yep.
Well, the dumb warrior has at least a modicum of intelligence, and he's surrounded literally by intellectuals. Like, you know, I'm playing a priest, and I'm a learned person, and Pat is a learned person. You know, he's playing a spellcaster, and we have a scout who may not
be... Well, it's three intellectuals, a psychopath, and a bird.
But Birdman is at least worldly intelligent. So, I mean, but anyway...
But yeah, the whole point is, what I want out of the character is I want him to get more intelligent. He's around these people in character. I've been having conversations with them. I picked up books, and I'm trying to read the books, and I'm finding that with our revolving GM thing, that isn't always the easiest thing in the world to do.
With a mechanical thing, I understand that when...
But
when
I'm doing that to build up to the mechanic.
Yeah.
I'm saving up my points. When we get to that point in advancement, I'm going to buy that intelligence. And you know what? I put it upon myself to make that excuse.
And
if you're saying,
really
why
cool.
did I learn to swim? If you plan on learning to swim, then I say that's up to you to figure out how you're going to learn to swim
and
ahead of time.
I think that's great, and I don't have a problem with that. Just the way I would do it is that the mechanical aspect of it is unnecessary. I, as a GM, look at your character and say, yes, you are doing that. Yes, a time has passed, and yes, it was effective. You can have it. You want those skill points? They're yours. You can have it. And I'm not worried about balance or anything like
that. Let me throw out a couple things here. As someone who is a little more rules-oriented and balance-oriented than Chad is, mostly agreement with caveat. The first thing that I'm going to agree with is that there are other kinds of advancement. Mm-hmm. As you play a character, you may advance in the plot, his personality may change, he may gain contacts, friends, enemies, he may pick up little tidbits of information, he may pick up pieces of equipment. There are other kinds of advancement going on. Not all of them have to be changes to the stats on the character sheet. Yeah. And I think if anyone's playing a role-playing game and that kind of advancement is either not occurring or that kind of advancement has been relegated to the point of total unimportance, I think they've probably either A, missed out on something, or B, you're in a group that's just not that interested in role-playing, which, okay, you know, fine, you know, good, bad, fun, and all that kind of thing. The second thing is I am certainly an advocate of an organic character advancement. Killing kobolds should not teach you how to swim. Mm-hmm. I realize at level you get this many skill points, and yes, you could put it in rope use.
Yeah.
But I, as a GM, am going to hold you accountable to, I want to understand how you got here. Now, at the same time, though,
I think you could also do it as sort of a retcon as well. Your character hasn't done any swimming up to this point. You didn't have the points to spend it in character creation to buy swimming.
That's going
to
be another point I was going to raise.
Let's say he has it now.
Sometimes I'm retconning things,
right?
Because either I didn't understand the system, particularly with our current game, since it's a homebrew hybrid, I don't totally follow the system. I thought I had skills that turns out I don't have because I wrote down the wrong name. Or I'm creating a new character and he's supposed to have been raised on a farm by a stream, and I just didn't have the skill points to buy swimming and character creation. And so sometimes I'm trying to back things in that should have already been there.
You know, something else that bothers me immersion-wise, and I don't know a way around it, is it's always all or nothing, it seems. You've deemed that level, you suddenly can do this. Well, if you're retconning it out, you are kind of explaining it, but if you're not, if you just suddenly have that ability, people just don't wake up one morning and say, I know how to do that. The problem is, I don't know a mechanical way to get you to that. Today I can lift 10 pounds, tomorrow I can lift 12. The math behind that makes my head hurt.
Right.
One way that you really should try to handle this in a game setting is, as a GM, especially if you're doing it in a mechanical setting where you hit a level, you've got skill points to spend, mm-hmm. or you're going to get new fighter moves, whatever it is. You know what? Say, well, you've got to go actually do training. And you know what? That training's going to take you 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. So from this point on, if everybody agrees, if we just dinged level, you guys are going to school. You're going to go do your training. And there you go. And in 3 weeks' time, you know what? You learn the basics of swimming. And there you go.
You know, the other thing you know,
you work out, you pump some iron, you get a little stronger.
It's
not that hard. I mean, this whole training thing, like you're saying, you're fixated on this. I killed a kobold, now I can swim. It's like, you know what? If you're interested in learning to swim because the full plate mail armor guy fell into the stream and nearly drowned, you've got a reason to learn. I mean, if it's just like, oh, I decided I'm going to take this basket weaving course because it's neat, maybe you do. And you know what? Say you went and trained. And as the GM, enforce that and say, well, you can do it whenever you get to the point to spend some time. I think, you know, Chad, it seems like what you're talking about is that you're focused. You're just totally focused on the fact that, okay, we're playing these characters and the entirety of their life is spent, we're all together. There's never any downtime. There's never any time where they're doing anything except around the table or, you know, they're on task and on the mission. Well, that just really can't be true. I mean, there's got to be some time where a time passes and you're just not on the adventure.
Yeah. And if you That's know you want to do something, like I said, I think it's up to you to figure out how your character learns how to do that.
I think
it's your advancement.
I think that Pat brings up a really valid point on that one too. And I think that it's a matter of scale. If you're playing a campaign that's going on for months and months and years, and I don't mean in real time, I mean in game time, that is spanning this amount of time, then yeah, you could really, really get into that. But let's swing the pendulum to the other end, where you have a game that's like the TV series 24, where the entire season is a 24-hour period. Or, you know, I mean, that's pretty extreme, but you know what I mean, where it's like you are playing the month in the life of these guys and it is intense, and there's stuff going on, and the shit's hit the fan, and you're go, 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 you don't have the time to enroll in adult education.
Yeah.
And I think that your point is absolutely correct, Pat, and I think a game master and the players need to look at what is the time scale that our game is kind of operating on to, well, first they have to ask is, do we just want to abstract this out? You kill a kobold, you ding points, you learn to swim, who cares? Let's, because we're more interested in the game than that mechanical stuff. Or do you want to take it from a realistic perspective?
A game system that I thought had an interesting take on half of the problem you guys are describing, and the half being keeping the development of the character organic to his actions. Now, this will not address the downtime issue, so for a minute, let's just take that out of the picture. Was MechWarrior 2. And I'm going to use MechWarrior 2 because, in my opinion, MechWarrior 3 sucked. And I'm hoping Catalyst... Wait,
are you talking the video game?
I'm talking the role-playing game. Gotcha. MechWarrior 2nd Edition versus MechWarrior 3rd
Edition.
I probably should not have said 2 and 3.
Yeah, because those are video
games. Those are video games. But, and Catalyst has not yet come out with their version of MechWarrior, which they've done a great job. I'm eagerly anticipating. They could disappoint.
Yeah, I think all their games are great.
I'm eagerly anticipating, and I wish they'd get off their butts and finish it. Because
well, they actually, the quick start rules are available for download. So you can get at least you can get a little taste for what it's going to be like. And the book is getting closer and closer to completion. That I can
tell you. Okay. I will see what I can find.
And I just have to give a little plug to the Catalyst guys, because Chris and I were at that booth a lot at Gen Con, specifically because of its location by the main entrance to the exhibitor hall. And we used it as our meet point, meet you at the Catalyst booth. Send text message like right. that. Well, anyway, we hung out with a lot of those guys, and we also, through Marsh and Bob, got to know them and a couple of their playtesters. Awesome people with an awesome company making awesome games.
So, going back to MechWarrior 2, something they had in there, and I only somewhat remember these rules, because it's been a while since I played MechWarrior 2nd Edition, and also because we never quite used their advancement rules the way they're written, was that in order to advance a skill, it took two things. One was at the end of each game, you got a certain number of generic advancement points. They may have been called advancement points. I don't remember for sure. But the other thing was every time you used a skill, if you rolled snake eyes or boxcars, meaning you horribly failed or you wonderfully succeeded, you put a little tick mark next to the skill. And I'm a little fuzzy on the rules. And
No, so far you've got it right. I remember right. this. So yeah, so far you got it right.
And those tick marks either made it possible or made it cheaper to advance the skill. I can't remember which. But what it did was it somehow rewarded you for use. So the things that you were doing all the time, that either made it possible or cheaper once
again. Well, you know what? I know that their argument behind doing it the way, that particular way, was A, if you got the boxcars, you learned because you did it spectacularly well. And when you got snake eyes, you learned because you did it spectacularly bad. And so you learned from your quote-unquote mistakes. And that's, you got to add those tick marks. And you had to get a certain number of them before you could advance the skill.
The other thing that saved you doing was if, let's say, you're on board the train of you want organic character advancement, you only want to advance the things you're genuinely using or training, this gave you a way of tracking that without having to put a tick mark next to it every time you rolled it. The presumption being, you roll the skill often enough, you're going to start getting the snake eyes and boxcars. And so you have stuff to keep track of, but you don't need an Excel spreadsheet to timestamp every single use and context of the skill to make the advancement.
What if I like Excel?
Well, then you can do that.
Wayne.
And I guess you could also kind of write rules around that if you want to say, fine, between deployments, you go to community college, maybe that's just worth so many of those tick marks. I don't know, but that kind of system lets you do it.
Now, I think that is a really great idea for, again, instead of organic, mechanical character advancement. I think that it's very, very easy for a game designer to really hork that up, because that seems like it could generate a lot of paperwork that I wouldn't want to deal with.
You know, it might, but I have the concern about, like you were saying, if a person's just doing this,
yeah,
you give
they're
that
grinding
to
a skill like in an MMO.
Right, but like you were saying before, if a person is just, let's say, I am every night doing push-ups, you said you would just give that to them without mechanical-wise. Well, you're going to have the people at the table that think about things more often than that. You're going to have the better role players. And before long, you're going to have the people that are shining at the table, and everyone else is going to be left out if you don't have some way to balance
that. Well, no. See, I mean, and I got accused of this in a couple of games ago. Are you playing the sheet or are you playing the character? Because a couple of games ago, I was playing the sheet. You know, yeah, sure, they're the most powerful, super-duper wonderful guy with the shiny armor and the big guns and the huge penis, but
why does it have to be one or the other? If you're playing the character, you've chosen things on that sheet to represent what you have in mind for your character.
I'm with Wayne on this one. To me, I think if you're playing the game, in my opinion, quote-unquote right, you can't distinguish the two. The sheet and the character are a reflection of each other.
You should be picking what you're. Fine. You should be picking what you're advancing based on what you want the character
to
advance.
But what you're saying is that a person who isn't as quick on the uptake as somebody else is going to fall behind in their role playing because they didn't know how to work the system with the GM.
I think he's saying fall behind on the character sheet because. If you have, let's go back to taking watch. When we take watch, the fat merchant's doing push-ups, the barbarian or wizard's doing nothing but watching for the goblin sneaking up on you. I guess, okay, maybe you can say I want to advance alertness. I don't know. But the point being that that second guy may not be able to argue he's advanced anything, whereas the first guy has. Is that what you're saying, Wayne?
Pretty much, yeah.
Why should it matter that one person is more advanced on the sheet than the other?
Well, and that goes back to the balance.
Okay, even if it's not in the sheet, you're running into those situations where if one player is by far better than the others at role playing in your mind, you as the GM think that, you know, Pat is better at showing what his character can do than I am, for example, you're going to spend more time with him.
I would if I'm a bad GM. I mean, remember, with a GM, you're supposed to be balancing a game for the players. And I don't mean mechanically, like the thief has to be as strong as the fighter. What I mean is you're balancing the spotlight. You know, it shouldn't be a matter of Dan made a really kick-ass character as far as the sheet's concerned. And his character is very good and interesting, has a good background. And he's given me lots of plot hooks to work with, whereas Pat... Maybe you're having a bad week and you couldn't get into the character and you think the game is kind of iffy anyway and your character is not so great and you didn't give me a lot of background hooks. It is still incumbent upon me as the game master to give you just as much spotlight as I give Dan to make the experience for you, no matter how crappy your character is. That's like in Rifts. I think Rifts is the ultimate challenge here. You have the historian with the broken pistol and syphilis, and then you have the guy in litter boy armor.
Do you realize how well those two tie together?
Yes. You have to make it even for both. I saw Blackadder 3, actually.
Well, I just... syphilis was great.
I saw Blackadder 3 last night. Dawn and I watched the whole thing, and they had this guy, and he's like, has a sword, and he's like this poet, right? And he's this artist poet, nobody understands him. And he takes out a sword, he's like, and if you don't give it back, I will kill everyone in the room with syphilis! And it's like, what?
Let me ask,
but what I'm saying Blackadder. Is that you have to give the syphilitic... historian as much spotlight as the guy who uses condoms and, in the glitter boy armor.
And that's all. Well, I think we're getting a little bit away from it.
Am I going off the ranch here?
Well, no, you're talking about, you know, the spotlight as opposed to like character advancement. I know how they sort of tie together, but I think it's different than like what Wayne is saying. And I'm agreeing with Wayne in the fact that you're saying if you're just going to give somebody something for doing that, it's...
Now, if you come to me, like let's use the historian and the glitter boy again.
Okay.
And you come to me, and again, you're thinking the game's kind of iffy as it is and stuff, and you come to me and you're like, hey, listen, man, he's in the glitter boy armor. You know, I'm just feeling kind of worthless here, but I don't want to give up my character. I kind of like my character. What can we do to work with that?
Mm-hmm.
It is also incumbent upon me to work with it. As a game master, the number one thing I'm doing is not... telling a story. That's the number two thing I'm doing. The number one thing I'm doing as a game master is making the experience for everyone at the table awesome. That doesn't mean we're doing wild things. Could be we're doing wild things. It's just the experience for the players that I'm facilitating a really great game.
Yeah, and see, I think, that's, you know, as the GM, you've got this good story going, and that's why I think your system, whatever system you're playing that is in place, should take care of this whole advancement issue.
Well, and this in this case, if the glitter boy is getting to do too much it's probably science combat heavy game. This is where character advancement comes in. The story picks up the powered armor piloting skill.
Exactly. Sure. I mean, so it's, well, it's out of your, it's not your responsibility to make, you know, syphilitic boy do that.
Yeah.
There's the system. And whenever he gets to the point where he gets whatever it is that he can advance something,
the
along,
system is a tool for you. It's as his the choice. GM to make the game awesome.
I don't deny that in any little bit. And I think that it's great. I think it's wonderful. And I would never stop anyone from using it. And if I were running a game and all my players came to me and said, listen, we want mechanical advancement, hey, I'm all for it.
Right.
But as a GM, as Chad sitting here right now, in a Chad game, I don't think it's necessary. I don't find it to be a necessary
And I also,
tool.
Well, and I think that you like, well, I haven't been in many of your games, but the ones that I have been relatively short duration, you know, like
Sabotage, yes.
Well, yeah, barring that, but I even though I think you're looking at more of a, not a long-term campaign where I think certainly in a long-term campaign that you're going to, you know, you may be playing in for years, you know, real time. Advancement is a hell of a big deal.
That makes me think
your situations where like you're, I've got this story I want to tell.
Let me ask you
guys. Tell a story.
It's a big deal,
you know.
But you know what? I even see in a long campaign, like we're talking years of real player time. I think that character advancement can be a hindrance because you're kind of running up to the level of the character. Your advancement is taking the game to like a D&D, it could be taken to a god level that you didn't
attend. Yeah, I definitely do have to agree with you there.
You can advance yourself right out of the story.
Or you advance up to the charts and numbers and math only go so high, and you're still going on with the plot.
You have something in mind for your character, and suddenly you've done everything you want to do with it number-wise.
Everybody's playing a street-level superhero game, and we love the street-level superhero game. And we're going on with it for years, and we're doing mechanical character advancement. Well, we're doing a street-level superhero game 3 years later, and we are Galactus.
Let me ask you guys...
It doesn't work anymore.
Two general questions.
Bigger streets, baby.
Bigger streets, I agree, man.
Two questions, and I want to close the show out on this. First question, and I'm going to start with Chris, just because he hasn't said anything in a while. And
I think he fell asleep.
I start to worry about what he's doing when he's not talking.
Well, I know what he's doing.
Question one. Do you guys, in general, like level-based games? Chris, we'll start with you.
Well, what are we talking about?
His hearing aid was off. You'll have to repeat the question.
Are we on episode 163 now? No.
Do you not have
to? You know what? I do like them, but it is not my preferred.
Why?
Because I feel that it is not... I buy into skill-based advancement more. In the sense that I find that it's, you know, I find that skill-based advancement is a bit more realistic.
I agree with you. I don't mind level-based games. I will play games like D&D. I don't object to them. But I don't like levels for two reasons. One, they're too abrupt. I'm walking along, all of a sudden I'm twice as powerful. Just like that. I mean, just snap of a fingers. It's not kind of where...
That depends on the system.
Not really. I mean, but it's where, I suppose, a skill-based system where you're buying something here, buying something there.
Oh,
you buy the components of a level, I guess you could say.
Over time.
Versus just, boom, poof, I know more spells and I have twice as many skill points. And Short answer.
Right, I like the idea of the level-based... Not the level-based. I like the idea of the skill-based, but it also makes me wonder if you get into a situation of, I need this skill, this down a subtree of that skill, and you start having to play on your character and do the Excel spreadsheets and take away from the fun of it.
The bulk of my playing has been actually in D&D, so yes, I have played level. I like level. I'm not as big a fan as the newer D20 level system because just what Wayne said, it lends itself too readily to planning out your character from the very beginning because you have to.
I hate the feat trees
that you have to do if you want to do something.
It's like you're playing an MMO.
You have to know it, and if you make a mistake, you're screwed.
There's your 6 pages of response right there.
Well,
hey, that's fine. That's the way I feel. I mean, I played it, and I do it. I'm guilty of it. I will start a character, and I'll say, I want him to do this at 15th level, so, I got to back down. I've got to take this, and this. Every level, I've planned it exactly out. Yeah. I don't like that because there's no life that works. Exactly. You know. There's no, it's you're pigeonholed in.
You know, and then what happens if the story begins?
When I was 16 years old, I wanted to be a cop. that obviously didn't work out for me, you know? And that's just not how...
And we're friends to this day because of it.
Yes. Well, actually, I wanted to be a cop, and then I wanted to be an FBI agent, but that's a totally... Yeah.
And then what happens if you're going down, like, you're going down a detective path, and want to learn how to find things, and then suddenly the story turns out to be a dungeon crawl?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Second question.
Well, here, I didn't give...
All right, Chad, go and give your answer. I said short answers.
I don't like level systems, and I don't like... archetypes for the same reason. There's too much of a disconnect. Every time I go up on the level, it's like, what does that mean? What does this level mean to my character if I'm trying to think of my character in as realistic terms as possible? It's because it's an abstraction, which is a good thing. It's meant to be an abstraction. I don't like that abstraction. Right. It throws me out of the game. And it's meaningless. I hate the paperwork. I hate figuring it out. I hate the simple addition, the math.
Second question. We've talked about character advancement. Earlier on, I mentioned the flip side of character advancement, which is a part of human life. Do you guys think, and I'm not proposing any mechanic for this, because I have no good mechanic in mind, but do you guys think role-playing games should also include a mechanic for atrophy?
On a one-to-one level, because old...
No, just the idea, vaguely.
Because
one-to-one level implies a system.
I like the idea of having the atrophy, but gaining something out of it. I'm not using this, but I am doing this. I lose a point here, I gain a point there.
Old D&D had an age system, but it was, you gain a level, you gain the powers of a god. You gain another level, you gain the powers of an even stronger god. When you hit a certain physical age on your character, you lose... minus one dexterity. Who cares? You can light the world on fire. But
I want to talk about the forest, not the trees.
Okay.
In general, no specifics, no proposed system. Do you guys think a role-playing game should have a mechanic for atrophy? That if you turn into a couch potato, you're suddenly not as strong or as dexterous as you used to be. If you spend all your time swimming and stop going to the firing range, you're not quite as good of a... You're rusty with the gun now.
Yeah.
Pure abstraction.
Okay. Quick and dirty answer.
Yes.
I think you don't need it, mainly because in your role-playing game, you're not spanning an entire lifetime in the game. Most of your games are going to be spent at relatively maybe a 5 or 10 year span of a period of time, and almost everybody that makes a character is going to make their character in their middle teens to middle 20s.
I disagree. Really, I think
if you make a character in the first place that's old, you deal with it in the beginning, and then that character that's old gets a little bit older anyway. So
let me ask you this question.
I disagree. I think it should be in there, but I know I would never use it because some people may want to use it. It should be there as an option.
Next issue, Chad.
Let me ask you this. Thanks, Bill O'Reilly.
Not Bill O'Reilly.
Let me ask you this question, though, Pat.
Exactly. Thank you, Chris. That, we old timers know.
You're saying that.
That's right.
If you have that going back thing, you're not playing a game where it's a 20-year in-game campaign. So that little ups and downs, little bumps and stuff, it doesn't matter. Shouldn't that apply the other way too? If you're talking about learning how to swim or learning a move, like a sword move or something, yeah, you go to medieval community college and take medieval adult education and you learn how to swim and weave your basket and throw a clay pot. But what if we're not talking about that skill? What if we're suddenly talking about astronavigation or fusion engine repair or gunsmithing? Or something like that. I mean, yeah, I can take a class on how to reload shell bullets, you know, how to make my own bullets. I cannot take a class in 3 days and spend my one level of experience points to learn how to make guns from nothing. And with all the proper equipment and stuff. Mm-hmm. But mechanical advancement like that allows for that. I can.
Well,
I agree with you, but you're raising a different issue, which is that not all skills should be equal. It should be easier to learn to swim than to learn to make fusion engines. But let's skip.
But if we're doing it over a 20-year campaign,
right? But
then I think you can.
Let's stick with the original issue. Atrophy, yay or nay?
You know,
no specifics.
Yay as optional.
I kind of side with Chris. It's like, sure, I think that's a great mechanic. Put it in every traditional role-playing game system. Sure. Doesn't mean I have to use it.
Right.
And I think it's a cool idea. I personally don't want to deal with the paperwork. If a character is role-playing something good, then
so you like the concept, but
yeah,
not
I like
the
I like the concept, not the, paperwork.
Not the paperwork.
And I would also say that I think that the majority of role players don't like bad things happening to their characters.
I agree. I think it will never catch on for that reason.
It's a noble concept that will never get used.
I think I will have to agree with Chad's final conclusion on that, is that I think it makes sense. It will never get used because nobody likes the idea that either one, the character is going backwards, or two, they have to declare every game session, go down their character sheet. I'm firing one bullet. I'm doing one push-up. I'm swimming one lap just to avoid. Yeah.
You know, nobody likes it in real life. Why are they going to want it in their game?
Right.
Well, so. But like I said, beyond the issue, I mean, how often are you going to be playing a character that in game time is you've played him for 30 years? I mean, if you do that all the time, then my answer changes. Then you need atrophy. If not,
I don't think you need 30 years, man.
I mean, because I don't think
that I can tell you things I've forgotten.
If you've played a character for 2 or 3 years, atrophy is so minor. I think on the grand scale that, you know, the atrophy that would happen in 2 or 3 year time with a role-playing character is negligible.
I don't know. But I mean, Chris, correct me if I'm wrong here, and I want to close the shot here pretty soon as we're going kind of long. But Chris,
correct
me if I'm wrong here, but doesn't human muscle begin to atrophy 10 days after you stop exercising?
You can lose benefits from exercise actually within a week.
Yeah,
after week. Exercising. So yeah, I mean, so...
You don't need to go 20 years to see the loss.
Yes, but we're not just talking about physical. You're talking about mental. And
atrophy is a broad topic.
We don't have the facts in front of us here to say, right. You know, in 2 weeks' time, you're going to lose a word.
Oh,
whatever.
But I have the facts.
I know you do. But this is what I'm saying is, right. You know, over a long scale, yes. Over short scale, you know, short term, I just think it's more negligible.
Okay. And I'll leave it at that.
And like I said in the beginning, it's not fun.
I love it when Pat gets all worked up.
Yeah, your timing is awful, though, because now we're at the end.
I know.
People like Pat never talks. Pat never talks. He's a quiet guy. No, Pat is the lion waiting in the weeds.
He is.
He's just, you were just walking along like, oh, blah, blah, blah. We got some room, pounce, blah, small, mall, mall. And I just totally knocked my mic over.
Versus Chad, who's always maw, maw, maw,
I'm
maw,
always, yeah, you know, it's yeah. Like, I just love the maw.
I'm good over short distance.
All right. So,
all those other topics that we were going to talk about, that but we didn't, but then we'll save for future episode. Who called that earlier? Thank you
and
very much.
And that we'll never, ever talk about.
Exactly. Oh, no,
I keep a running list, so we will get to them eventually. So next episode, maybe we'll talk some more about one-shots. We also have a couple guest hosts and interviews we're trying to get in. It's just getting everyone's schedule to line up has not been easy. So
and feartheconn.blogspot.com.
Yeah.
Please check it out and keep me honest. There is a chance that I might not ever post to this thing. And if you see me not posting for a stretch of time, send me an email. Yeah. Tell me to start posting on it.
Or send me an email and I'll go over and hit him in the back of the head.
Yes, he can do that.
I will do that.
Mm-hmm.
Alrighty. Thank you guys for tuning in and we will catch you next time.
See you.
Bye-bye.
Maw, 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 maw.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2009. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor, as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.